You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy Syracuse is 1-0 week. Happy Rutgers week for those who pine for the old Big East. Happy, I guess it's my birthday week by default, although that's not for a couple days.
Happy early birthday.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I'm officially going to be on the wrong side of 30. Fun times.
Welcome.
Yes, I look forward to joining all of my good friends. I'd say pretty, I mean, aside from some tangential sports stuff in the Syracuse realm that we'll talk about, like, pretty good week, especially for Syracuse football fans who were understandably kvetching about the Ohio game like we were.
Yeah, and I'll say, excuse the trash being picked up outside. thanks to the holiday, but yeah, realistically, we could talk Ohio quick for a couple minutes. Thought it was a lot of fun. Thought that there was something to be desired on the offensive side of the ball, but at the same time, like, doesn't everybody remember getting really angry about only quote unquote beating Colgate 33-7 in 2016? And really not doing anything interesting on offense in the first game pretty much every year since Babers arrived, and not just like blowing the doors off a team because they could. And realistically, you know, Ohio probably wasn't that team anyway this year, but like, you know, the Colgates and Central Connecticut States of the world, like, you know, like you don't have to put up 80 points just because you conceivably can. And to me, like, yeah, I think that this was a good win. It wasn't an amazing win. It was a win that got things done without really revealing a whole lot of what we're going to do this year. The fact that it didn't force Tommy DeVito to try to carry a game on his shoulders, I think, was a great sign of improvement for the team and the offense overall. I thought Sean Tucker's performance was excellent with 181 yards on the ground on 25 carries. I felt that the wide receivers, TBD, but the offensive line really – we'll see how the rest of the season goes, but night and day compared to what we saw last year. And the defense was a lot of bend and don't break. That's not going to work as well against better teams than Ohio. But at the same time, like, Ohio did throw some things at us, and we managed to persevere. And you know, someone like Deuce Chestnut comes in and really puts on just a fantastic performance in his first game. I think a lot of the returning players played pretty well overall. The line, I wouldn't say the line held up incredibly well, but would also say that there's some excuse there without McKinley Williams still. Definitely going to be the unfortunate and maybe oddly weakest link of the three kind of position groups within this defense. But the fact that that's the weakest link tells you a lot of just how good the secondary and the linebackers are. So overall, came away with feeling like we did what we were supposed to do. We got the monkey off our back potentially in terms of just getting a win and feeling like we can start burying last year and never talking about it again. And I'm overall more optimistic now than I was going into the game, at least.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it last week. Like, this was not one of those, like, rollover opponents that you sometimes get with MAC teams. This team is probably a lot closer to the, like, the Western Michigan team that gave us some trouble a couple years ago, the Central Michigan team, the Toledo team. This was, like, definitely more of, you know, Ohio, I mean, just look, don't go down their resume. Obviously, it's a new coach, but it's still a coach that's been there for, like, a decade. You know, they've been to bowls 09, 2010, 11, 12, 13, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. Like, this is not a team that loses just by default against, like, middling Power 5 teams. It's a pretty solid program. So to beat them by 20 points, it probably could have been more than 20 points if Babers was interested in really showing something, which we know is not his MO early in the season. I thought it was a really good sign. Like, we really didn't put much out there on film. DeVito basically just played very within himself, but like we weren't really dialing up a lot of like fancy stuff for him. We just kind of imposed our will on them, which is something we do not always do against teams of this caliber. So that was a good sign. If you told me, like, if you just told me going in, like, you're going to run for over 200 yards and the offensive line's going to look really solid, you know, who knows what the Ohio defensive line is like, but still, like, it didn't matter last year. No matter who we played, it didn't look good. And Sean Tucker was going to look like a superstar, and Deuce Chestnut was going to look like he did. I would have signed for all of it. And it doesn't bother me that Tommy DeVito only threw for 92 yards. We did not need him to do more than that. We know he's capable of doing more than that. So we'll likely see it this weekend just based on the level of opponent. But overall, you have to be pretty happy with it. I honestly really think, like, this weekend's game is so interesting because while Rutgers, you know, the score is a little more glaring because of some of the things that they did to Temple and some of the takeaways and some other stuff, offensively it wasn't much more than what we did. You could honestly argue it was less. Like, they scored almost all their points in short field or on takeaways. So you have two teams that should be very happy with their games against overmatched group of five opponents. I think our group of five opponent was much better. Temple was really bad last year and they didn't look much better this year. And they lost their quarterback, I think, during the game, Dwayne Mathis, the former Georgia quarterback. So yeah, I think you really don't have much more to ask for. I think it went according to plan, and now we'll probably see a much more full representation of what the offense looks like. Obviously, it's a much more, I think, probably a more difficult opponent in Rutgers because they do look feisty overall, though.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't the Rutgers of, you know, the first, well, it's after the first year in the Big Ten. I think since then, a struggling team overall in Big Ten play. It's not that Rutgers, but it also isn't the Rutgers that we're very familiar with in the Big East, and it's important to note that distinction as well. I think that, you know, the Syracuse team clearly has plenty more that they can do. I felt that one of the biggest takeaways that I had from that week one win is that you saw sustained drives. No, they didn't always result in points the way that we wanted them to, but SU also didn't really try to do much to make that happen. And also really didn't try to do much but settle for field goals once, especially once the game was essentially in hand, at least in by Babers' calculation. I think that, you know, we saw a late touchdown tacked on with Cooper Lutz, but realistically, like, nothing that occurred other than, you know, the initial advent of DeVito RPOs was necessarily, like, that shocking. And to me, the fact that they could sustain drives, get the defense some rest, and do a lot of damage despite not really having short fields, despite not forcing turnovers. They only had, I think, four tackles for loss in the entire game. Like, the one turnover that they forced was toward the end with that, you know, insane Deuce Chestnut one-handed interception. Like, beyond that, it was really just taking advantage of opportunities when they were given to them and creating some on their own. Like, to me, that this what I liked about the game, and we talked about this last year and the year before, really, is like, what's repeatable, and I felt that this game was very repeatable against the bottom half of the schedule, and I also do think just because it was so because it was not relying on big plays, because it was not on either side. It was not relying on a lot of turnovers. It was not relying on luck. It was just reliant on sound play on both sides of the ball for the most part. I do like where we're headed. I mean, obviously, again, just 1 week. So still plenty of book to be written here.
We've seen so many games like the Villanova game, some of the other like kind of nightmare week ones, even the ones we've won, where like we've tried it out and put it into like panic mode right off the bat.
The Liberty game.
Even the Liberty game for sure. Like even seasons where we've been okay. Like it's not necessarily like you just pencil in a nice win over a MAC team in week one, and one where you really don't have to burn much. So I'm pretty thrilled with how it went. It doesn't mean that it's going to mean everything going forward, but I think you certainly signed for this, and then hopefully we'll open up things in instructors. I know just reading some stuff coming from the New Jersey side of things, it does sound like Rutgers is aware that there's a lot more to show, and there's a little bit of worry on their part, because I know the run defense has not been a strong suit for them over the last couple of years under Schiano. So we should have a pretty interesting one, and then hopefully everyone gets over the dome. Obviously, everyone that is vaccinated and feels safe can get to the dome and bring a pretty good atmosphere for the first time in 2 years.
Absolutely, and we'll get more into the Rutgers stuff in the second half. It's going to be a shortened podcast today due to various time constraints, but I did notice that Rutgers fans do seem to be pretty realistic that this is going to be a close game. But Dan, before we get to half, did want to talk about one other Syracuse-related thing. This is not football-related, but responding to the women's basketball situation today, that would be Wednesday, SU Athletic Director John Wildhack definitely didn't say the things he needed to say. The apologies seemed like they were kind of there in words, but I'm probably writing something about this tonight. I don't know how many times we need to do this, but I just feel like the apologies and the accountability just aren't up to snuff at this point. It's starting to get concerning. And you and I have talked about some of the Wildhack concerns overall as he enters kind of like the second half of the decade of his tenure at SU. And I'm getting concerned that there's a lack of progress, perhaps, from the athletic department in terms of, like, when he got there, it seemed like there was this big fanfare. There was some wins that accompanied that that may or may not have been related to his tenure. And since then, I feel like we've kind of gone back to some of the old, Syracuse things that happened at Syracuse, if not some of the worse and not even joke-worthy things in terms of just like off-the-field stuff and just a constant stream of what feels like bad news that needs to be apologized for or something needs to be addressed. And it doesn't seem like this in particular, that this situation was addressed well enough.
No, it really didn't. I'm always like open to someone admitting that something went poorly or that it wasn't done well. And it was a really unfortunate like passing of the buck for Wildhack. It's not like he just got here yesterday. Like if he had just gotten here and hadn't gotten up to speed on what had been, like, this wasn't the first time that we had heard like stuff that brought up about Q. Like you could make the, you'd say that like it wasn't handled right in the past, or like something was handled fine and people's concerns had been assuaged before or something, but it wasn't like it was all new information that there were concerns about Q's tenure at SU. So the fact that he said that he didn't know anything, like, that just can't fly. Like it was public information. So just really disappointing, especially because he's not someone who just got here, 2 months ago. He's been here for years now. He's, I think, kind of struggled to signal any kind of much needed culture shift within the athletic department. It seems, every time we have some kind of situation like this, it just seems like more business as usual for SU, and that just hasn't been good enough for years now. So, it's really disappointing. I constantly hate to have things like this happen with an athletic department I care a lot about, but there's no way to sugarcoat it, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like I think that there's an accountability question and a reporting question and a process question, and all these things start coming up. And for a school that I feel like one or multiple of these elements have cropped up quite a bit in the last 20 years regarding various situations of and also varying, severity, like it's not this is not a good look. Again, like I hate to not like just hit the nail on the head here, but I'm processing my thoughts so I can write something a little more on the nose this evening for Thursday. But I do just feel like I'm not calling for anyone's job. But I do think that there needs to be just a concerted effort on the part of the athletic department to be more proactive, to be more on top of these things, or at least appear to be on top of these things. And the excuse of "I didn't know" like just doesn't work in 2021.
Yeah, it's just really disconcerting. And again, it comes up all the time, and it's like maybe a little bit too simple, but we're Syracuse University. We have a very, very well established and notable PR department. We're supposed to be teaching people how to handle situations like this. We're really bad at it all the time.
Yeah, as someone with a public relations degree from Syracuse University, I can tell you that I'm very concerned.
Yeah, it's just like, it's just very frustrating. Hopefully, again, like I don't think any of us are like jumping ship. Like we all graduated from the school. We're very invested for one reason or another. But it does make it like just a little bit harder to like, it's harder and harder to hand wave when this stuff happens over and over. So hopefully with some, you know, we learn something, et cetera, et cetera. But it seems like every time we hear this stuff, it is more and more of like, you know, or less legitimate. Which is unfortunate.
Yeah, I'm sure there's plenty. I mean, well, I wouldn't even say I'm sure. I would hope there's more follow-up to this. I know Syracuse.com has already not really pulled any punches, and a lot of fans have been pretty annoyed about today's events. So I'm assuming there's probably more to come. But this is going to be a very interesting, in a bad way, women's basketball season. And I hope for the sake of the program, for the sake of all the athletes who were affected by everything that happened under Q, and just in general by like just the vibes, and but also the young women who all put in the time to help grow this program and build it into something that really is on par with the men's program in terms of stability, interest, and success. Like I hope that everything that's transpired doesn't just tear it all down and make all of that hard work for naught, because they did put in effort when there wasn't really much of a foundation to like start with.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. It's like you can't give Q the credit for building the program and then forget that all of the players that came here and put in a lot of work and you know evidently dealt with some incredibly less than desirable treatment in what appears to be many cases, don't get like an incredible amount of the credit as well. So yeah, it's you hope that they treat this situation both very seriously and then moving forward, find someone who can lead this program with grace, with the same level of success that we were becoming accustomed to, but also in a way that isn't damaging. Because it doesn't need to be like that. Like you have plenty of programs that do things like quote unquote the right way, but like this stuff doesn't happen at every single like great program. You can have a winning team where people are treated with the respect they deserve and feel good about like what's going on. So hopefully we can move past it, and also we continue to invest in and support the women's program the way they deserve to be respected and supported.
Very much agreed.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right, Dan, why don't we talk a little halftime before we get into some more exact notes on Rutgers. What have you been drinking of late?
I took it fairly easy last weekend. I was down in Jersey, but I did continue to work on some of the local Last Wave stuff and the local Cape May stuff I had from a couple weeks ago. Also, got my hands on some Maine Peeper, which was exciting. This weekend should be kind of uncharted territory. I'm going to be in the Jackson Hole area. I don't know if you have any hot Wyoming/Idaho beer recs, but it's kind of a new world for me.
So your best bets are probably the Idaho breweries and the folks and the stuff that comes in from Denver that you might have missed a couple weeks ago.
That's fair.
Yeah, realistically, there's probably not a ton of Wyoming staples in the area, but you could find a handful. There's some good Boise stuff too. I mean, like, I'd say the top level of Boise, like, is pretty good in like the Pacific Northwest area. I'll touch base with you after for a little for more specific recommendations, at least.
I look forward to it. I really am going in very blind, but I'll probably, if I see stuff that's from the two states, we're going to be bouncing between the two states. I will probably just try it. So hopefully there's some decent stuff out there.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like I said, during the summer, I was really surprised by the Montana beer scene, to be honest.
Nice.
So you never know what's around.
That's true. Especially those states, like, you know, it's very easy for stuff from there to fly under the radar. So totally. I'm sure there's some quality stuff going on.
Indeed. On my end, I noted to Dan before we started that I was a little under the weather for the second half. Really, like within 12 hours of the SU game, I was under the weather pretty much for the rest of the weekend. But
John gave up his health for us, everyone, and he should be commended for it.
I sacrifice everything for Syracuse football. But had some Rip Beer Company, Stratocaster, West Coast IPA, really, really good. On Friday, had from Modern Time, Pool Zone that I've mentioned, their Session IPA. It's only like 2.5%, super good. Also had Stone's 25th anniversary triple IPA. My wife said it tasted like somebody dropped a shot of vodka into an IPA. So take from that what you will.
Is that a good review?
It depends. I thought it was fine. But it was very aggressive triple IPA, I must say. Definitely not hazy. I feel like we've talked about this. I feel like triple hazies are actually like pretty pleasant to drink. And like way too easy to go down considering the ABVs. This one, on the other hand, it's like 12.5% and definitely tasted like it.
Color me shocked that Stone did something that was a little bit much.
Agreed. Some other things I had, Hopabolic from Beechwood, just a West Coast IPA. Had Metaverse, was a hazy IPA from Modern Times. And then I had Cool Zone with Petite Sirah and Zinfandel Grapes. It was just a session farmhouse ale from Modern Times. So still got some things in, nonetheless, despite the taking a couple days off from the holiday.
Very nice.
Yeah, so hopefully very nice is a Syracuse effort against Rutgers. Now, obviously, you know, we're familiar enough from our previous time together in the same league, but at the same time, there's been a lot that's happened since. Coach is the same, but not a whole lot of other things are in terms of familiarity. Dan, you're right to point out earlier that Rutgers seems to know that this is going to be a tough game. I know I was talking to Aaron over at On the Banks, SB Nation's Rutgers blog, and he seemed pretty aware that the quarterback play in particular did not necessarily, pass kind of the grade needed to beat a team like Syracuse. I know that they later in the season they might have some potential reinforcements. At the quarterback position, I actually kind of would want to face Gavin early because I feel like we've had some good luck kind of welcoming, newly minted elite quarterbacks to college football. I know Trevor Lawrence being one of them. And I think that ultimately this is going to be a really tough game. I think Rutgers might be able to force Syracuse to pass enough to generate a win for themselves, but I'll do a full prediction at the end, but I think realistically, this is going to be a very tight game. Mistakes and maybe a turnover are going to, decide the day. But this is definitely no cakewalk for either team. And I think it's best for both teams fans to acknowledge that. And I think for the most part, it seems like online, at least that both are.
Yeah, I was actually, I kind of felt the same way about the Rutgers response to their game last weekend. And just going into this game, I work with a Rutgers person, talked to a few others. And like, it seems like they know that like Temple's pretty bad. I know Temple hasn't been that bad for a while, but like they took a huge step back last year. It doesn't look like they've really moved much forward this year, at least based on one game. And also that 61 points, like again, it was like a lot of Temple making huge mistakes and Rutgers capitalized on, and they deserve credit for that. But it doesn't necessarily mean that when like their offense is put to the test that we know much about them. Noah Vedral, the Nebraska transfer who's in his second year there, was just around, you know, a little over 50% completions, 138 yards, 5.1 per attempt, which is pretty pedestrian, a touchdown. Didn't make like the big mistakes, but he kind of managed things. He ran the ball well for them, which was important because they didn't do much on the ground otherwise. They finished with 220 yards, but that was like a lot of different guys hitting a couple carries. But their core guys, it wasn't super impressive. They had like four guys that were under 4 yards per carry. So, and like, you know, it's easier to run the ball when you're up a million points and you get to, you know, not worry too much about what happens. But yeah, I think these two teams are like weirdly kind of mirrors of each other. Like last year at Syracuse's best, or the last couple of years at Syracuse's best, like special teams, very good, which has always been a mark of Shiano football. Their special teams are always very good and opportunistic, and that continues to be the case in the year. And then a really opportunistic turnover-based defense. That's what Rutgers did in week one. That's what they did to some success last year. And yeah, I mean, they turned Temple over. How many times was it?
Two interceptions.
Five times total. They had three fumble recoveries and two picks. I think they had a kick return touchdown too?
They had an interception return touchdown, and
they did not have any kick returns. But Aaron Kruchenk, who's really, really, really good, he averaged like 28 on return on kicks, and then averaged almost 28 on punts. So like, you really can't kick it to him. He's like one of the best in the country. Need to avoid that. Which luckily, I think James Williams looked really good in his first game for us.
He looked great. I was a very big fan of what we saw there.
It's so funny to get excited about punters, but we've just like been so used to really good punter play that it's like you can really appreciate it. Obviously, none of it like jumps off the page when you just look at the stats, but like he had two punts. They were both like pretty right around midfield, and both were inside the 10. One was inside the 5. Like it was exactly what you want. So
yeah, two straight scholarship punters to redshirt, and it seems like both were a great decision.
Yeah, we're building that pipeline. So yeah, I think these two teams actually do, like, their strengths are pretty similar. Their weaknesses are fairly similar. I will say I feel better about the Syracuse running attack than I do Rutgers's. I probably feel, and Rutgers' run defense is apparently, like, the big concern over the last couple of years when they've lost big to, like, similar teams. Like, I think Illinois really gashed them last year, and Illinois was, like, fine, but not great. And then some of the better teams, like, they just... people just run whatever they want on them. If we can get the type of rushing attack that we had in week one and the offensive line looked solid again against like a pretty good but not like overwhelming Rutgers defensive front, I think there's a chance we control this game. But I think it's going to be very, very evenly matched.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Rutgers, you know, knows that this is a matchup that from the rushing attack standpoint that like we should be able to have an advantage, but it's not as if they're going to come out in the exact same thing. That teams have gashed them in. It's not like they're just going to sit back and say, okay, let's let them run and see what they do. Like they're going to try to force us into passing situations. That probably means, you know, varying types of blitzes, pulling in safeties, pulling in linebackers. Like I'm expecting them to at least early throw the kitchen sink at us, force us to throw and try to establish a lead, because I still don't know if the Syracuse team can really play from behind. We didn't do a great job of it last year. We didn't do a great job of it in 2019. We didn't really have to do it in 2018. And then when we did, it didn't go well. I think that realistically, like the more you let the Syracuse team run the football and feel comfortable running the football, the more likely it is that you know they are going to secure a win without having to do much. Now, that's not to say that Syracuse is so talented that that'll work against everyone, but I think against a team that has, for the most part, like even-ish talent, maybe slightly more, but I think we have similar experience levels, like that's the sort of thing where it probably works. And maybe that works against Wake, and maybe it's competitive against a team like BC even. But, you know, but that's not necessarily going to be the game plan that works against, you know, your Florida States and Clemson's of the world. And yes, I'm including Florida State as a more talented and better program right now. The big concern I have, and at least we'll have some prep here this time around, is, you know, I know you mentioned the quarterback, Vedral. He can run, and I think that that's worth noting, if only because of Syracuse's recent / long-term history of not being able to stop mobile quarterbacks as much. And I think last week we got thrown for a little bit of a loop for a bit when they had the was it UNLV transfer? I forgot his name for Ohio. That Ohio threw in, and I feel like we didn't have much of any tape on him, and he definitely like was super effective at getting them out of trouble situations. And I'm actually surprised they didn't lean into him a little bit more, because I don't necessarily think SU had the same answer for him that they did for Rourke.
Visual, he seems like kind of opportunistic to me more than like right. He's not this like super super athlete. If you've watched, he started his career at UCF, and he looks very much like those UCF quarterbacks where they're not run first, but they will hurt you with their legs. Not totally unlike what Tommy was doing in this game. Obviously, I don't know that they run as much like designed read option stuff for him, but it's definitely part of what they are, you know, what they are aware that is going to be part of the offense. So. Yeah, he certainly is a guy that you don't want to let going, because like I don't know, there are a few things worse than those games where all of a sudden you're the opposing quarterback who doesn't seem like a super athlete, he's just like somehow found his way to 80 yards and a touchdown, and right. You can't get off the field on third down because he constantly is leaking out of the pocket and finding first downs. So yeah, it's definitely a concern. As you said, like Syracuse has been like really bad about defending dual threat quarterbacks for the longest time, but he's more of like the kind of like sneakily opportunistic guy versus like the, you know, Lamar Jackson hurdling a defender and we see the highlight for the rest of our lives die. So yeah, I'm not like super concerned about him, but there is a situation in which like we just don't defend it well and he just uses every inch of space that we give him and it really comes back to bite us.
Agreed. He definitely concerned, but the fact that he's probably the biggest like wild card here, at least I think is a good thing. I think that Bo Melton, I know we mentioned Crookshank. Bo Melton's another guy who I wanted to make sure we mentioned at least on him. He's the biggest light receiver that they have. Definitely somebody who might remind folks of a Taj Harris type. Definitely someone who's going to, you're going to hear his name a lot and it's probably going to get annoying. But at least I think we have one of SU's better open field tacklers in recent memory on the team now, in Deuce Chestnut, who some Rutgers message board folks definitely were sure to tell everyone that he was not good enough for an offer from Rutgers after he committed to Syracuse, but not a second before.
Imagine, I like how many based on the week one, like how many teams wouldn't be offering him a scholarship? He looked incredible.
Again, Ohio first game, some caveats, but sure tack, like I haven't seen sure tackling like that in a while.
The combination of like open space tackling plus the incredibly athletic interception and just like good overall defense, like obviously we were playing he was playing off of guys against Ohio, so he was going to give up some receptions, but like that was partially by design. And when he can open field tackle like that, like you'll take it, because eventually, like, teams don't win a lot of games taking like 4-yard dump passes because mistakes happen. So yeah, it just, you know, all the hype, I was almost getting a little concerned entering the game because he was a true freshman, because we've had such high expectations with these defensive bats recently. And like, man, that was just so impressive. So yeah, it's nice to have, hopefully the Jersey guys are really tuned up for this one. Hopefully Tommy is ready to bring it, but you know, it'd be nice for them, I think, too, especially because, as we know, he was, as you said, not good enough to play for Rutgers. So it's really a big spot for him. I'm sure he's really wishing the things had gone differently in his recruitment.
Honestly, yeah, Tommy, Taj, Deuce, like this is a perfect storm for something good for Syracuse if these guys are super motivated.
With how the local recruiting stuff is in Jersey, and how like there's been a real renewal in like the importance for New Jersey after a couple of years where we weren't focusing on it as much, and I think to our detriment, it would be you'd probably see some NJ.com stuff if like those three have big games, because they are very much into keeping the Jersey guys at home. That's almost like the whole reason why you bring back Shiano, because he is a really good relationship with all those coaches down there and has recruited the state really well. If you have three Jersey guys for SU light up Rutgers, like they're gonna get some attention in Jersey, and it's big in recruiting. I know Baber's like semi downplayed it this week, but I don't think that like realistically, I think it's pretty important.
So Dan, I guess before we go, what is your prediction for this one? Who do you see taking the win, and why?
Coming into the week, before I started reading up more on Rutgers and on their strengths and weaknesses, I was kind of prepared to take them. I think we just knew more about them. They had a surprisingly like a surprising season last year with Gianno back. I think he's done really good things there, unfortunately for us. That being said, I think we kind of, stylistically, I think there's a good chance that we're a pretty bad matchup for them. I'm gonna be optimistic after last week. I'm going to take Syracuse in a nail-biter, a 28-27 at the Dome.
Yeah, I was tempted to go something similar, but I actually did commit publicly on the banks to a 27-23 win for Rutgers. I think that this team is on the way to respectability. That doesn't mean I'm predicting a bowl or anything like that, but on the way enough to respectability. But I think that there could be just a bit of a letdown after a strong week one win on the road. That some false confidence that enough has been fixed, and I could see some mistakes, because we did see some mistakes against Ohio that start to come back and bite SU. I don't think they play a poor game, but I think that you see DeVito maybe try to do a little too much here and there with the passing game, and maybe we just wait a little too long to start getting into the playbook a bit. So again, 27-23, I think, you know, maybe some penalties and a turnover late end up turning the tide and giving Rutgers the win, but I wouldn't say I'm happy about it.
Yeah, like I said about Ohio last week, I wasn't going to be surprised with anything that happened. I wasn't going to be like, I think I said that I wasn't going to be super disappointed if it was like a super close win, considering they're a pretty quality program. I think this week's kind of similar. Rutgers, I feel like it's silly to call it like we're in this like weird rebuild, because Babers, you know, we're supposed to be past that point with Babers, but we did win one game last year. You could make the argument that Rutgers is like a step ahead of us just because they did seem to turn that corner from where they were. Granted, that's where we were supposed to be in like 2017. But like, I think there's the talent levels are probably pretty similar. They may have a slight edge there. At the same time, like if last year was really a weird, just like anomaly because of all the injuries and because of COVID and everything else, and we're more like the team, even the kind of flawed team that we saw in 2019, this is pretty even, I think. But yeah, I nothing will surprise me. I think even a loss here, like, I don't think it totally resets everything, because there's a chance Rutgers is like a middling Power 5 team, and then it's like losing to, you know, half of our division. I will say, like, we can't, I will be deeply disappointed if we have like a weird Maryland a couple years ago game. Like, that would really depress me. Otherwise, like, you know, I think gonna be pretty level-headed. If we blow them out, then I think it'll be hard to, though. If we blow them out in like a really impressive fashion, then all bets are off. I will be posting a lot.
I agreed on all of that. I'm hoping, to be honest, I'm hoping for my sanity and everyone else's, for a middle of the road win where we win by like less than a touchdown, but enough to feel like we did what we were supposed to do and it wasn't just luck.
I'm gonna openly root for a blowout win on my birthday weekend. Sure, but I'll sure. I'll take a 5-point win. That's fine.
Or 55 points. I don't care. All right. That was Dan. I'm John. Thank you everybody for listening to Trend News and Absolute Podcast. You rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, Megaphone, TuneIn, Stitcher, Overcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, and Go Orange.
Go Orange.